This program is proudly brought to you by Alan Gray, building long-term wealth for our clients since 1973.
And dear listeners, welcoming you to your Wednesday edition of the Business and Economic segment. And once again, just highlighting to you that as if you're wondering why Dwight is jumping between the two particular shows, if you have not known for the past 10, 11 weeks, it's because every Wednesday we've got the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia, and primarily where we talk about, you know, unique particular talking points. Well, most of them are ultimately the understanding around unit trusts that we've, you know, come to intricately understand. Yeah, intricately, I almost said uniquely understand, but intricately understand. And ultimately also the particular insightful discussions that have emanated from these various particular episodes. Just so that you know, dear listeners, and before we start off, there is always the opportunity for you to participate in the discussion, ask one or two questions. That's obviously in terms of how time allows us, as well as also drop us a text message on our SMS platform at 1040. In studio, it's 083-288-401. Just so that I know, get that straight. And ultimately, if you can't get through there and it's a text message that you'd like to leave us, it's 1040. And as always, we've got Etienne in studio here with us from Alan Gray Namibia. Etienne, good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you once again. We don't know what's up with the weather. I hope the weather is also not as puzzling for you as it has been for many of us. But yeah, welcome on this Wednesday edition.
Thank you. Thank you, Dwight. Yeah, no, I mean, I sit in an office most of the day, so I hardly notice the weather, but I must say, yeah, it is a bit unusual.
Yeah. Well, if we reference South Africa with the snow, then obviously unusual would be just understating it slightly. Yeah. But in our subject for today, or in our discussion for today, Etienne, obviously we're taking a look at some of the talking points that we will once again be highlighting for listeners to also participate in and also factor in. Don't worry, dear listeners, the opportunity for you to call through, we will actually take it from the midway point at 6:30, not like now, but call us contributions if you can keep it like short and sweet so that, you know, we can get to answering but any particular questions you might have. If we start off today, Etienne, obviously, many people have heard you talking about unit trusts, the importances of financial literacy, other particular subject matter, but this is always also ultimately also discussion in terms of where Alan Gray Namibia can also sensitize what it does. If we start from there, you know, who is Alan Gray Namibia? And just for the listeners to understand, you know, what can we look at in that particular question?
Yeah, thank you, Dwight. Yeah, it's been 2 months since we started with this series, so for the benefit of those listeners who weren't able to, you know, listen from the onset, Alan Gray Namibia is an investment firm that was established in 1996. But actually, our relationship with Namibia goes back much longer than that, back to 1984, when we first had our first Namibian client. And, you know, very proud to say that institution is still a client to this very day. Alan Gray was founded by a gentleman by the name of Alan Gray, and I think it's got a proud history of being active in this in the financial services world in Namibia, South Africa, and Botswana. If you think about it, if you just go back to independence in Namibia and look how many available investment options there were for the general public, is actually just a handful. I mean, today the industry has grown a little bit, and I must say I'm quite proud of the role that Alan Gray as an investment firm has played, over the past 30 plus years in Namibia. It's a lovely long-standing relationship, and I'm proud to say it's, you know, one of the more recognizable investment brands in Namibia.
And there's an interesting particular point just in that, how can we put it, point basically that you highlight, you know, in terms of we had a look at from independence to now, you know, people now the opportunities they could access ultimately through Alan Gray Namibia, it's now sort of like worlds apart in terms of those two particular pictures. Obviously, my question, Etienne, is going to be about needs in that scenario. Remember last week we had the discussion about, you know, looking at, you know, life after life. And then the other one was about the financial literacy component. Do they obviously play a part in this particular, particular point of when Namibia became independent? You know, Alan Gray Namibia obviously interacting with Namibia. It's actually a little bit older, just to correct that point also, dear listeners. But, you know, has that particular needs changed specifically? Just from what you've observed specifically. Well, I don't know if you've been there since 1990, but yeah, in that scenario, yeah.
In 1990, I was still in the school benches. I think, you know, there was no matter how far back we go, there was always a need for good financial advice, for good investment firms. You know, variety for investors are quite important. You know, prior to independence, Namibians had the option of working with South African firms.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, although Alan Gray Namibia, you know, is part of the larger Alan Gray group, we definitely acted in a way that, you know, catered for Namibia's specific needs, whether it's through our unit trust funds that are available, you know, to institutional investors or, you know, individual investors, or our sort of standalone portfolios for large corporates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was for us very important not to be seen as just another South African company with an office in Namibia. You know, our entire dedication towards you know, the Alan Gray Orbis Foundation, which is a shareholder of Alan Gray Namibia, and you know, the scholarships that they hand out to Namibian, you know, qualifying Namibian learners, you know, and the local shareholding, the shareholding by Namibians in Alan Gray Namibia, you know, I think it's testament of our commitment to have something available for Namibians specifically, you know, and not just sugarcoating a South African product, which is the case with, or that I think that was popular at the beginning, you know. But no, I mean, it's lovely the fact that Namibians have choice, or and, you know, have local choice. I think that's great. That's a win for investors in general.
And just sort of like over the next 4 minutes, dear listeners, it will also, the next particular question will fall into the next sort of like block or slot of this evening's discussion. And this is the important one, and don't worry, we've got like 4 minutes before the next ad break. If we had to look at the particular, you know, the particular unit trust products, and obviously this is something that we've re-emphasized many times in the episodes, but just for iteration and for those listeners coming on now or tonight, you know, what are these unit trusts and where do they basically fit into the investment and saving? Because I also interchangeably use the term investment and saving in the questions that I've sometimes also fielded to you.
Yeah.
So how would they factor into these?
So there are many things that one can invest in, or there are many products available to save through, right? And, you know, there are also different types of assets. You know, the main ones, as we've mentioned before, being shares, bonds, cash, commodities like gold, platinum, and so on. And then property, whether it's, you know, commercial property or listed property companies or residential property. That is what is available, the main sort of types of assets that are available to investors. And I think the benefit of a unit trust fund, it's an investment structure that will invest in, you know, in the case of a what we offer in Namibia, would invest in all those different types of assets that I've just mentioned. And individuals can then invest through this structure and get exposure to shares, bonds, cash, commodities, and property. So it's a very convenient vehicle, and it, and you know, when you think about it, if you were to say, I've read somewhere that I've got to invest in shares, and you know, government bonds or bonds in general are giving good yields. You know, where would you start? Mm-hmm. How would you start to decide which shares should I buy? You know, what commodities are the right place to be at the moment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some years ago, 15 years ago, the price of platinum was you know, more or less in line with gold. Now it's half of what gold is worth, or mm-hmm. maybe even less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to take that guesswork out for the investor of what to buy, which shares to buy, what the best bonds, yielding bonds are, etc. Investment management firms like ourselves would put together portfolios on behalf of clients, and then the next step for the investor is then to say, okay, what is my investment goal? And depending on that,
mm-hmm.
invest in one of the unit trust funds that are available out there. And it, you know, it's a very affordable way to get proper exposure to the financial markets, whether it's the share market or the you know, on the interest, the fixed income side.
Exactly. And before we continue, dear listeners, we're quickly stepping into a short break and coming back after it.
Time. When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. Go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money, and then money gives you more time for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
And coming back, dear listeners, after the break right there, and you are on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, and this is the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia. We've got Etienne in studio. Etienne, there is a caller online already. I know I emphasized 6:30, but if we can quickly field a caller. Eagle FM, and it's a missed call. Dear listeners, don't worry. There is no, like Helmut says, participation in Ramadan. That's not a particular policy. But let's quickly take this first particular caller. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening, please. How are you?
Fine, you, Angabwana. How are you doing?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Angabwana. So, Angabwana, I did listen. You do have the opportunity. Etienne is here. Let's hear.
Yes, oh, thank you very much. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Thank you very much. I have been listening to you from this financial sector, and I'm very, very grateful for the information and the education that you are giving unto us. I know very well that even myself, I benefited from this industry that you have been conducting with Dwight there. Yeah, so at least you were able to see what type of opportunity in the market there, where we might want to invest whatever what we have. Yeah, but the one thing that it was in my mind was concerning the, you know, this policy, life cover policy, in regard to unit trust, where one might, you know, decide to or choose to invest.
Mm.
This life cover policies, I know they play a significant role in terms of when, say, one died and then maybe kind of inheritance and things like that. But before that is away or, you know, on. So can't it be really utilized? Because to, you know, to utilize it and maybe use it for example, you want to, you know, purchase an asset or want to use any other thing that you might want to.
Sorry, Angabona, just to quickly get the question, is it...
Just when you die. So the other thing is, you may be listed to purchase it, to buy some bonds. You know, when the government, you know, sells some bonds, you know, treasury bonds and all these other things. Cut it, be really, maybe it's a policy or an act that is there that's preventing us to utilize that money. Except when we die. Is there no other way? So this is one question that I have. Maybe the other one is maybe to just you could get maybe a contact. I haven't gotten it yet. So that whenever we want to talk about the money market and issues like that, we are able to get to you and get some.
Angabona, do you still want to stay on and then Etienne can answer?
I think if it maybe let me go out and listen, and then maybe if another queries that I come back to Paul.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think for now it's enough.
Okay. Thanks, Angabona.
Welcome.
So, yes, Etienne, so it's primarily about the types of particular products,
yep.
And also the where we left off just before the break, saving and investing,
yep.
In that scenario, but also about a life after life scenario that we also spoke about last week.
I think if I understand the question correctly, and thank you for the call, is whether or not one can utilize the life policy. Or not. The thing with a life policy, it's basically think of it as a bet that you take with an insurance company. And basically what you are saying is, I bet you, Mr. Insurance Company, that I will die. And if I die, you have to pay out an amount. Right? And the insurance companies say, well, we're happy to take on that bet. We bet that you either won't die or that you would, you know, stop paying for this bet before you die. That's very simplistically put, but it is you are paying for an event that might occur. So it should not be seen as an investment per se. It is rather, it falls into the category of what we call risk products. So it is, you are protecting yourself, you are insuring yourself against the risk, and in this case the risk being death. So there is no credit that builds up in this product that is called a life cover, life insurance, death cover. There are many ways to refer to it or being used in the industry, but I think there's no credit that is building up. This is merely you are paying, like it's short-term insurance for your car. You are paying the insurance company to protect you in the event of a car crash or something like that. In this case, you are protecting yourself against the event of death. Right, so there's no credit that builds up. It's not, you are not putting away money. You are rather paying for being insured. I hope that puts
it's
it
almost
into
like
context.
the what if scenarios.
Correct, yeah. Correct. So you and then they were, and perhaps they are. I'm not an expert on the different risk products out there, but certainly 20, 30 and more years ago, it was quite popular to have this life cover, the life insurance, with a savings component attached to it. So the premium that you would pay, say, just to make the calculation easy, you know, you could say, I'm paying $100 per month, 90 of that is for insuring myself against the event of death, and the other $10 goes into you know, almost a savings, like, component, yeah. side pocketed. You know, without running the risk of generalizing, but these were quite rather expensive types of products. So, you know, the fees that one were paying were quite high. You know, from what I know and what I've experienced, it seemed to have kind of disappeared from the market. So, but no, there is no way, as far as I know, that one can use the life cover, you know, to withdraw. Where you can use it is for collateral when you take out a loan. So, for instance, I have a loan with a bank for the you know, for a property, and before the bank gave me loaned me the money, they said we want life insurance because they want a guarantee that they will get their money back when I die, and I can no longer pay the monthly mortgage payments on the house. So then I had to cede a life policy to the bank. So if something happens to me, whatever is outstanding with the bank would be covered by that policy. So that's perhaps the one way in which one can use life policy, and that is for collateral for a loan.
Yeah, I've also had experience with that specific scenario in terms of even buying a new car. Even though you had external insurance and the likes, sometimes the bank would say, look, we've got to look after an investment because we financed the car. And primarily, it's slightly, if you're still paying it off to your listeners, it's still sort of like the bank's property. And it's almost like a hire purchase scenario, but it's not true in that sense, where they would even take out a life insurance component on you. Yeah, in that scenario.
And Dwight, you will see it with many of the establishments or businesses that grant credit. If you go to some of the furniture
stores
and you purchase whether it's a couch or a bed or a television, they would require you to take out a life cover for that. So in the event of your death, they are not, you know, they don't have to go through processes in recovering the money that is still due to them. So yes, it's that kind of cover is used quite extensively, especially where credit is involved.
Yeah. Now, obviously, dear listeners, just before we had the caller's contribution, we were still on the particular talking point in terms of how the aspect of unit trusts and particularly investing and saving feature in. And it's actually a good thing, Etienne, because you also helped answer part of it in the caller's contribution that we just heard now. But this is even sort of like, has there ever been a sort of like a conflicting viewpoint coming through from average people about how to look at investing or looking at saving? Or do some of them sometimes interpret saving and investing as the same thing? Or for our understanding, is it the same or opposite particular points?
I mean, different sources, I guess, would give you different answers. But my general understanding between, you know, saving and investing is investing is putting money away with the hope that it would multiply, that it would increase. That is investing. You know, there's no particular goal other than wanting your money to grow. With saving, you could save for different types of, you know, saving towards different goals. Whether, I mean, as I said before, I think one of the largest sort of goals or most prominent goals for saving is for retirement. Right? But then it could also be saving some money for the next 2 months for all the Christmas expenses are coming. So you can have these very, very short-term savings goals, and you can have the very long-term ones. So generally, that is the way I've understood it. But I've also seen different definitions that is available out there. But yeah, investing in general is putting money away with the hope that it would grow.
Just before we step into the ad break, Etienne, we've got another quick caller's contribution.
Yeah, sure.
We can quickly take the next call.
Eagle FM, good evening.
Thank you very much for the answer. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes, you know, the only because I understand that I know there is some kind of fiscal reform some years ago, and the former Minister of Finance, Mr. Kalis, can you pronounce the name?
Kalis Leitwein, Angobona.
Kalis Leitwein.
Don't worry, Angobona.
So, the concern was that most of the money from the insurance companies are shipped out of the country. So, as there was that recommendation, that our proposal, that I'm saying that, yes, you can use it for that collateral for property and things like that. That we understand. But if I want, because the reason why I have got some of this, either is saving or investment, is to grow that money on my portfolio. So if I want to have more, to create wealth for myself, for example, why can't I take a portion of that money, a life cover, also to see generate more money, maybe buying through unit trust, for example, or any other, or I can even use it to buy bonds. And then, obviously, they also, it is still the same way when you say now if you die, so this amount of money covers this one. It's the same, because the only difference is that I will generate more money, because I'm also able to at least determine my, you know, when the more I generate money, I will definitely go to unit trust and sell some shares, you know. So why can't it work in that principle? Because now more money is shipped out through this financial company insurance. So now, how does it really benefit us as Namibians who have got these policies, or is going to just benefit maybe places of Africa or wherever they are, you know? So those are some of the things that I needed to know.
Okay, thank you, Ankubona.
Welcome.
So yes, Etienne. But but before we go, we quickly got a short break.
Certainly.
All right. We'll be back right after that. And then Etienne has to answer on that question, dear listeners. We'll be back right after this.
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster. Or you could stop scrolling on the internet. Just think of all the hours you'll save. Now what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. It can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do, even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
Life's all about making real moments. So here's to you for being 100% real. From having conversations on the stoop to the early hours of the morning, to taking pictures for memories, not mentions. To chilling at home with the chummies and saying, of course, they can bring their friend of a friend of a friend. Here's to making everyday moments better by keeping it 100% real. Vintook, real beer for real people, not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And coming back, dear listeners, from the quick break right there, and just welcoming you back. This is the Midway Point here on your Business and Economic segment in partnership with Ellen Gray Namibia. And we left off with a quick question that, you know, just brought us into the ad break, and we will now flow into that quick response. Well, it won't be quick. Obviously, it's not a one-word response. But just where Etienne will just, you know, provide insight into the question that was just fielded just before the ad break. Etienne, on your side?
Yeah, no, thank you for calling back, sir. The as I said, you know, life insurance is an insurance product. It's not a savings mechanism. I think if you want to save, you know, there are different products available for that purpose. So first of all is to make sure that you have the right product, whether it's a risk product or you know, an insurance product or an investment product, make sure it's the right one for your needs. So the I think maybe another way to explain it, I can take out life cover tomorrow and die the day thereafter, and say I've taken out 2 million of life cover, which would cost me, say, around about $500 per month, and I take out that 2 million, and a month later a bus knocks me over, the insurance company will have to pay out that 2 million, even though my contribution, you know, so far, not my contribution, my premium was $500. So if I were to borrow, so say now I've paid this $500 for 12 months, now I've paid 6,000 in total, and, you know, what would I be borrowing against what? So I know the life insurance products are not structured in a way you are paying insurance. You are not saving. It's not a savings vehicle. I think maybe where the thinking behind your question might also have come from is that this same question that you were asking about why can't I borrow from my life cover is also very much a topical thing at the moment about pension funds. Is, you know, why do I have to wait to the age of 55 or 60 or whatever the rules of the pension fund dictate before I can access some of that money, because it's money I've worked for, it's money that I'm putting away. And we've seen in South Africa now that there was a reform, the so-called two-pot system, that would allow you to access some of your pension savings without having to resign. So I think, some of the thinking, as I said, might, from your question, might stem from, what I contribute to my pension fund and why can I not access, because at the moment, the only way Namibians can access the pension fund prior to retirement age is by resigning from the employment. Or if there's a case like severe disability and so on, there are some rules. So, there's maybe a case to be made, to be argued. You know, is it not worthwhile to make such an allowance on the pension fund side? But I can tell you from the life cover side, and I don't represent a life insurance company, you are not saving, but rather paying for a risk event.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that you're also highlighting that, Etienne, about the role that certain products play that people interact with as well, because in most cases, even with the financial literacy discussion we've had, and even the life after life talk of last week, it was a notion in terms of looking at what specific needs are there in terms of that are positioned around the person. Obviously, one of the particular understandings sometimes is also, like you mentioned earlier, knowing the needs that you have. Because if you know you're going to drive a car, an insurance sometimes would be associated to it. But not many people would say, okay, the car might be an investment. Or the car would be a collector's item car, you know, one of those special editions that come about and which cost you an arm and a leg maybe. But even in that scenario. And it's a good thing that you also referenced it in terms of the unit trust. Because I want to ask the particular question in there that also factors into what the caller's contribution was, in terms of accessing various kinds of assets and items and shares internationally as well. Because he also made reference to the outflow of money, but that usually is a natural thing that happens in this particular question. Or am I sort of like slightly incorrect in the natural?
So I think the listener, and I would also like to invite the listener to, after the show, in the coming days or weeks, very much welcome to either call me or visit our offices and we can further explore this topic. But I think what the listener was referring to with the money leaving Namibia is that historically many of these insurance companies were not Namibian companies. So the profits they made from these insurance premiums would go to the holding companies, to the shareholders in South Africa. I think that was maybe the question or the reference to money leaving the country there. But on the unit trust topic, Dwight, there is also, if I consider the two Allan Gray Namibia unit trusts that we offer, both of it has have offshore exposure, meaning that we also invest in assets in South Africa, and we invest in assets overseas. I remember you particularly liked Nintendo, the video games, and some other well-known companies like Samsung. You know, those are just examples of companies that we invest in overseas. In South Africa, they are some of the banks, some of the the banks are, and some of the retailers think about Woolworths.
Mm.
You know, we do invest in those, and then we invest locally in Namibia. So within a unit trust, we not only diversify by investing in different types of assets like shares, bonds, cash, property, and commodities, but we also buy those assets across the world. So wherever we find very good opportunities to put into these unit trusts on behalf of our clients, we would take it up. Of course, we are governed by local rules. There's an upper limit of what we can take out of the country because our two funds comply with pension fund investment guidelines or regulations. We will also at all times have no less than 45% invested in Namibian assets.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean, and that's just another example of how convenient a unit trust is, you know, whether it's Alan Gray's unit trust or of other unit trust providers out there. I don't think that's the point. The thing is just it's a great way of saving or investing for many different outcomes.
And it's also a very good thing that we've got to highlight that, because dear listeners, as you know, in terms of if you've listened from the start, obviously there's a clear distinction. That's one of the reasons why I asked the question of investing and saving. And sometimes people have thought that insurance sometimes looks like saving or even investing in that scenario. Just before, I did see that the phone line was flashing, Etienne, but it seems like it's a bit quiet now. Just if we've got to consider investment goals, if the individual has to consider investment goals, and this is actually also installing itself or plugging itself into what we've answered so far, how would that then be translated or look like? Because obviously people, no two people obviously would have the same particular needs or wants. What would that look like in an investment goal idea or idea manifestation for that matter?
You made a very good point, you know, Dwight. You might have two, you know, persons sitting in a room, both the same age, but their lives are completely different. Mm. I've used the example of myself being, I'm turning 45 fairly soon, but my only child is less than a year old, right? So typically, I guess if you take averages, you know, persons of my age, you know, their children would be much older. Mm. And in my case, it's not. So I have, with the coming of the baby, a new investment or savings goal, rather, you know, came into existence. And so for 18 years from now, I would like for that child to have the opportunity to study at a university or a, you know, let's call it a tertiary institution of her choice.
Mm.
For that, I have to put away money now already. So I've identified this savings goal, i.e. my child's education.
Mm.
Now there are a number of different products available on how I can achieve it. I could buy an 18-year or government bond with a duration, or that's good for another 18 years, and it matures when she needs to go and study. I can invest through a unit trust fund with a long term that is geared for long term savings, or you know, they are some of the insurance companies offering study policies.
Mm.
So again, you know, that decision I would advise should be taken with the assistance of a financial professional, you know, typically a financial advisor, to say what are the pros and the cons of these, you know, different ways of saving for this, for the same goal. And then there might be shorter term ones, you know, as I've mentioned before, it could be very short term in nature. It could be that you might want to visit a relative outside of Namibia or at the other end of Namibia, you know, in the coming months or year, and you already, you know, put some money away for that purpose. But it is extremely important to identify the goals, preferably writing them down, because research have shown that the simple act of identifying and noting them down will make achieving those goals much more of a reality than just having them in your mind.
Mm. So it's usually about the writing down and then taking, well, the one thing that I've tried doing is taking the steps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you can write it down and you go like, okay, how do you get there, Dwight?
Yeah.
How do you achieve it? But before we continue, dear listeners, we will have a short ad break springing up on us. And it just, we will be stepping in what is a very, I'll call it an interactive session for this evening. We will allow a caller's contribution right after the ad break, dear listeners, just to let you know, because I did see the phone line flashing. There is no participation in Ramadan so far. We did have caller's contributions, but you can still come through at 083-288-401. Alternatively, drop us a text message. I'll quickly just check through it in terms of seeing who has dropped what so far. In terms of 1040, that's where you can send the text. We'll be back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda.
There's a song that goes, money can't buy me love. And that's true. But then they told us all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-time investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
And coming back, dear listeners, welcoming you to the Business and Economics segment here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, in partnership with Alan Gray on your Wednesday evenings. And this primarily is, as we're heading into what is the last quarter of this evening's discussion. We have a small window for callers' contributions still to come through, but I just want to get Etienne in on this particular talking point. Etienne, if we ask the particular question in terms of how to go about investing, specifically, you've highlighted the unit trusts, which have various particular products available. Obviously, there are also ones locally. What would they look like? But firstly, how would people, try to access the unit trusts and the discussions in there?
So, Dwight, our preferred way of investing and saving in general is by consulting a financial advisor to help you identify your needs, your goals, where the gaps are, and then to come with a solution for those. But investing through unit trusts are as simple, or could be as simple, as reaching out to the provider of these. Unit trusts, in this case, Alan Gray. I mean, you can contact our offices directly, just with the caveat that we cannot provide financial advice. We are by law not permitted to do so. We can assist you with opening the account, providing you with factual information, but we are limited in terms of what we can give you. But to think that the unit trusts, and as I said, they can contain shares and bonds and commodities and all those things, are quite accessible. Mm-hmm. One can invest in these from $500 or even less by some providers out there. At Alan Gray, you can open an investment account starting with a debit order of $500 per month, and our consultants are available to assist. It's typically completing an application form indicating which fund or funds you would like to invest in, and then providing supporting documentation. I think listeners will agree that in recent months, it's become more sort of cumbersome, you know, to open an account anywhere. You know, it's not just providing an ID, a copy of your ID and a telephone number. These days, we have to provide a wee bit more documentation. But still, I mean, I think it's a rather simple process to start something that is quite important, you know, to do.
Dear listeners, I did see the phone line flashing still. You can still come through at 083-288-4401. There is a, sort of like an underlying subject matter, obviously, that looks at financial literacy, Etienne. Usually, it is something that we emphasized a lot in like two episodes back. The importance of financial literacy, even in this discussion of investing or saving, you know, how does it even position itself right there in that scenario?
Dwight, yeah, I mean, it's something that is quite dear to us. You know, the importance of financial literacy. Why? You know, roughly 80% of people's problems are directly or indirectly related to money. You know, so understanding money and effectively using personal financial management tools such as, you know, budgeting, investing, insurance, tax, etc. Would put you, you know, understanding that would put you on the right path to not fall into certain traps or to get out of certain holes. You know, so the goal with financial literacy is really financial wellness. You know, to put you in a place where you understand enough, where you are literate enough that you mindfully manage your money, your finances, to prevent your money from controlling you. So I think that's the ultimate thing. So, you know, we spend quite a bit of time thinking of how to, I don't want to use the word educate, but it comes down to education. And, you know, no matter, you know, how successful you are on the academic front, you might even be a professor in something, but it doesn't make you financially literate, right? So, We would like people to encourage people to be more financially literate, to spend more time in understanding what exactly it is that you are buying. You know, you might think that you are buying an investment, but you end up buying life insurance that's got no sort of a trading value, like the listener, the person who called in earlier mentioned. So it might be that your understanding is that you're getting one thing, but you end up with another. So that is being financially literate, educating yourself or doing it with the assistance of a financial advisor, you know, just puts you in such a better position to be financially successful, you know, compared to people who just completely ignore or remain ignorant on it.
And I have a... I don't want to say it's a WhatsApp text question because it seems a colleague of mine skipped the line in terms of calling through or sending a text. But nonetheless, it is welcome to those listening out there on this evening's particular episode. Etienne, so the question, just from, I won't identify the colleague, is asking, can a unit trust investment ever go wrong? There's obviously also tying in like what we answered a little bit earlier with the other caller's cost contributions. So it's also it also ties in there slightly. What does it look like in this scenario?
Good question. And I think for most people, when they ask, can it go wrong, is can I lose my money?
Yeah.
Right. So in theory, yes, you can lose your money. So if you consider that a unit trust, and I'm just going to use the two Allan Gray unit, the two unit trusts that we have available in Namibia. As an example, if we take the balanced fund, we invest in a whole range of shares, everything from Namibia breweries right through to Nintendo and Samsung, some of the banks, some of the food retailers. For you, and then, you know, that's just the shares. Then they are the government bonds, you know, issued by the government of the Republic of Namibia, and some corporate bonds, and then we invest a portion of the unit trust in cash with the different banks. Now, for you to lose your money, permanently lose all of it, all those things that we invest in, It has to go bankrupt. It has to fail, right? So the chances, I would say, is rather slim for that to happen. Where it is a problem is that the value of the unit trust changes on a, well, actually more than just a daily basis, actually minute by minute. So as the share prices change, as interest rates change, bond yields, etc., change, so would the value of your investment. And what happened to a lot of people, or what happens in practice, is that when investors see that I've invested, say for argument's sake, I've invested $20,000 into a unit trust fund, and I get my statement a month later, and now it's only $19,800. Now the people are inclined to say, oh dear, the value of my investment has shrunk. I better take out all my money before I lose everything. Right? So what then typically happens if you do that, you cash out $19,800, meaning you have just locked in a loss of $200. If you give it enough time, typically and historically, you know, you would have recovered from that and your money would have grown. So it's not a case of it growing each and every day. You know, you have to give it time. So when you do decide to invest in unit trust, you also have to tell yourself, I have to be in this for the long run. And unit trusts, in the information sheets, it would tell you that our recommended investment period is 2 years or longer, or 3 years or longer, or for the, you know, the very long term. So that, you know, what can unit trusts go wrong? Yes, I mean, if the assets that the unit trust invests in, you know, goes belly up. But also, if you don't stick to your investment plan and you withdraw when it is down, then you permanently lock in that loss instead of just riding out the wave and wait for it to recover.
Etienne, there's actually a good thing that you made mention of there, primarily about the, you know, it describes in essence the panic if people look at something and they realize, okay, it doesn't seem to be working. And I've used another question where I sometimes use looking at noise and the noise that influences this. But usually I never ask the question in terms of, you know, why the shortest time period, like you referenced, 2 years, for the, you know, unit trusts to give their value in that scenario. Why is it that we're looking at 2 years? Is it the track record in terms of what Alan Gray has looked at and has, you know, performed under? Or is it sort of like a set standard? Can I assume it's like an industry standard thing?
No, it's not an industry standard, Dwight. I think in the 2 years that I made reference to is very specific to our Alan Gray Namibia Stable Fund. It's the period that we recommend that you stay invested in for the, you know, the least amount of time that you stay invested in. Why is that? If you consider a money market unit trust, for example, it only invests in cash. So, you know, cash or, you know, earns interest, and, you know, there's no sort of a variation in the capital amount that you invest. So if you invest 20,000 in a money market unit trust, you know, you will get, it will always be 20,000 plus the interest you earn. If you invest in a unit trust that has got shares and commodities, in the moment the, say we have five different shares and let's just call them Bank ABC and then Brewery D and pharmaceutical company E. If the value of the shares that we invest in, if they fall, so would your unit trust investment. Now, with shares, you know, you have to give it time to grow, to, for, you know, for the investment thesis, as we call it, to play out. So when we at Alan Gray decide that we are going to invest in a company, we will always see what is the potential for growth for the next number of years for the share. So we don't expect that share to grow with immediate effect. There are maybe certain plans that the company have put in place that would affect its share price, right? So for that reason, we recommend that if you invest in a unit trust other than a money market unit trust, that you give it the appropriate time for this to come to fruition. Think about it. If you plant fruit trees, you can't, you know, there's not fruit immediately. If you buy cattle, you've got to raise them, you've got to feed them till they're ready for
to build up the herd.
Build up the herd. And it's the same with investments. You have to give it time to grow. So that is, so there's no even a rule of thumb. Just in our case, we say the type of unit trust funds that we run, we think the appropriate time to be in there as a minimum is 2 years and 3 years, respectively, for the two funds that we have.
And in reference to trees and planting, dear listeners, don't go close to olive oil trees, because one of the discussions I've heard is that you have for the first 8 years an olive oil, an olive tree would not be bearing any fruit, because the small olive is actually a fruit. So yes, patience is the game there. Etienne, we'll quickly be stepping into a short break. After it, I'll just ask you in terms of just leaving us with some last thoughts and just what listeners can look forward to in terms of if they contact Alan Gray and the likes and some extra particular information sets. We'll be back right after this, dear listeners. We would technically be the end, so participation Ramadan will kick in. I don't like using that term, so I'll have to use it because Helmut might tax me on it. But we'll be back right after this, and we'll see you in on the other side of this ad break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have a capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And just coming back, dear listeners, here on your number one talk radio station, this is the Business Economics segment. We were literally supposed to end just on the top of the hour at 7, but obviously, I'm appropriating a little bit more time. Just as we end off on this evening's discussion, do remember, dear listeners, you can always listen to us through your conventional radio set. Or through the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on any of the platforms, that being obviously the Apple and the Android platforms, or alternatively listening to us through our website, which is just Eagle FM Namibia. Just Google search it like that, you'll find it. It's quick to use, easy to use. And just as before we wrap things up, just have to ask, obviously, from Etienne's side, Etienne, just in terms of any extra information bits and information sets that readers or listeners obviously can make use of, and also who they can contact. Can they contact you directly in terms of, talking to Alan Gray directly, obviously for the various products and services? I also want to, but after buying a washing machine, I'll have to postpone those plans. But yeah.
Yeah. No, Dwight, thank you so much. I am often out of the office, but I'm more than happy to take calls or visits from anyone that are interested. But in general, do phone our offices. It's Windhoek 061-460 and then four more zeros. So 460-000. And another zero. And then info@alangray.com.na is the email address for any queries. And our consultants would be very happy to assist where they can. I think, in terms of closing remarks, for me, it's quite important to make sure that you are financially well. There are too many of us that retire with insufficient funds, too many of us that stumble upon emergencies in life for which we haven't made provision. I think it's the right thing to do to set time aside and take stock of your your financial status. Are you on the right track? Do you have anything in place? Or, are you like me that waited till in my 30s before I properly planned? The sooner you start, actually the less you need to put away, to have the same success as somebody starting later in life. So whatever it is that you do, don't ignore the subject of investing or saving. Mm. Start as early as you can and seek, professional financial assistance in helping you, on that journey. I think if more of us spend more time on the topic of being financially literate and having a financial plan in place, the entire country would benefit from that. Mm. So yeah, don't ignore it. And thanks for the opportunity, Dwight.
And on that note, dear listeners, I'd like to thank Etienne for this evening's participation. Once again, also thanking the callers out there and you, the listener out there, for participating. And on that note, this does bring us up to the end of this evening's discussion here in your number one talk radio station, this being Eagle FM. And this was the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia. Let's see each other again, same time, same place, for the other regular programming you always find me on. But stay tuned for the next program to come on after the break.